ecological disaster. What does the future hold? By Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. A sketch of some potential disasters that may occur in the near future. Nuclear war, ozone depletion, global warming, AIDS, earthquakes, pollutions or toxins. Only a century ago, many Bible commentators thought the disasters of biblical prophecy were unrealistic. So they saw the Jesus descriptions of disaster in Matthew 24 as just the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70. The strange locusts in Revelation 9 as Turks invading Europe. The world is getting better. Since then, the 20th century has brought us two world wars, nuclear weapons, and some of the worst totalitarian states in history. We now have a more sober view of the world situation, and we are not quite so sure that the world is getting better. Back in 1979, Isaac Asimov published a nonfiction book called A Choice of Catastrophes. He listed some 15 possible disasters, some certainly far in the future, some possibly rather soon. He sorted them out into five classes, which he called Class 1, universe becomes uninhabitable. Class 2, solar system becomes uninhabitable. Class 3, Earth becomes uninhabitable. Class 4, human life is destroyed. Class 5, civilization is destroyed. Well, in our talk today, we want to look at some disasters, and none of them will be on the universe destroyed level, I suppose, except the last one we're going to talk about. But these are disasters which are impending today and might not be far in the future. Disasters which are being taken seriously by scientists and politicians. Our statistics that we use here are taken from the World Almanac, from Science News, and from the website www.avert.org. Some potential disasters we're going to suggest would be nuclear war, or if you prefer, nuclear terrorism, ozone depletion, global warming, AIDS, and other epidemics, earthquakes, and pollutions, toxins. Let's have a look. Nuclear war. Nuclear war was a serious threat from the mid-50s to about 1990, and is now somewhat reduced. Really, I think, looking back on it, have to thank God that nothing of that sort actually happened, because the threat was indeed very real. There's still more than enough armaments around to have quite a severe nuclear war, however. We don't know for sure what all the effects would be. Many would be killed by the blast, and that would depend on where the blast took place and how powerful a nuclear weapon was used. Many more would be killed by fallout of radioactive materials from the blast, and that again would depend on the details of whether the blast was high in the air or down near the surface. Surface produces more junk usually that can fall out, how big the blast is, which direction the wind is blowing, and what's downwind from it, and that sort of thing. But the damage done by the Chernobyl meltdown is a good example, I think, that rather serious problems could be caused by a rather modest explosion. And we also have the possibility of nuclear winter, which has been investigated theoretically, but our handle on weather and climate is not in such good shape that we can be sure of predicting the results here. Again, it would depend on the size of the blast and number of blasts and things of that sort, but the possibility that's being referred to here is the idea that sufficient junk would be thrown into the upper atmosphere to cut down substantially the amount of solar radiation coming in to Earth's atmosphere and cause the temperature, particularly in the center of continents, to drop rather drastically. Since the 1990s, the biggest threat has been nuclear proliferation. Over 30 countries are now using nuclear power. A number of these are seeking to develop nuclear weapons, and the scariest ones at the moment are North Korea and Iran. And there's a real possibility of terrorist groups getting weapons or building them. delivery systems would be much more of a hurdle for terrorist groups and even for smaller nations. But what about trailer trucks or shipping containers? As long as one is not concerned to be able to make a tactical strike that occurs immediately following something or another, it would be possible to ship the material in the shipping container into a relevant country and have your people deliver it to a major metropolitan location somewhere and then set it off. And would not need anything very sophisticated in the way of intercontinental ballistic missiles or nuclear submarines or anything to get the stuff there. Scary picture. Ozone depletion. Life on Earth is protected from deadly ultraviolet radiation by a layer of ozone, a molecule of oxygen, in which there are three oxygens combined together instead of the usual two. We're protected from ultraviolet radiation by a layer of ozone in the upper atmosphere. Ozone down near the surface is something we generally classify as pollution, but up there it's a rather important protection. This ozone layer in the upper atmosphere is being depleted by several chemicals produced by mankind, primarily various oxides of nitrogen and a number of refrigerants called chlorofluorocarbons. Already in recent years, we're beginning a hole in the ozone layer in the polar regions during part of the year, and this seems to have increased substantially in recent years. Obviously, we have not had the equipment to measure the ozone situation in the polar regions far back in the past, so we do not know exactly what all the causation is here. It's notable that the occurrence of skin cancers has risen by nearly 100% since 1980, and this may possibly be due to increased ultraviolet radiation reaching Earth's surface. Well, that's ozone depletion. We don't know for sure where that's going to go. Obviously, governments are trying to take some substantial steps to ward that off if possible, and banning chlorofluorocarbons has been one move in that direction. Global warming is receiving quite a bit of press these days. The Earth's climate has long been warmed by a greenhouse effect. That is, the atmosphere and the particular gases in our atmosphere function to trap the solar radiation that comes in so that is converted to infrared radiation at the surface, the infrared doesn't just go back out into space. And the upshot is that the surface temperature of our Earth is about 35 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it would be with this out this greenhouse effect. But now the concern is with too much greenhouse effect, what we call global warming. Now, carbon dioxide and some other gases are accumulating from modern technology, increasing this greenhouse effect. Carbon dioxide is up over 10% in 30 years. Nitrous oxide is rising about 2 or 3% per decade. We're not sure how much effect this has had on temperatures as yet, but the hottest years since regular temperature records have been kept, that's been just about a century, have been in the past decade. If the temperature trend of the past 20 years continues for the next 20 years, we will have the warmest weather in the past 100,000 years. We're not exactly sure what the effects of global warming would be, but it will probably warm the poles most. It will probably produce very dry winters, dry weather, in continental interiors, probably messing up agriculture there anyway. It would raise sea level. How much? Well, it depends on how much glacial ice were melted. Melting all the glacial ice, which would be counting Antarctica, the major source, and Greenland, the next major source, would raise sea level about 600 feet. That would, of course, be quite substantial. Most places where humans live are under 600 feet above sea level. Well, that's global warming. We'll have to see where that goes, whether humans can take steps to avert that or not. Lots of concern in that direction. Our next item is AIDS, and I call it AIDS, etc., because the possibility of other epidemics of one sort or another is not trivial. I don't discuss those here in this particular talk, but just AIDS. AIDS, which is acronym for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, is a viral infection that, using computer lingo, crashes the human immune machinery. So it causes the machinery that humans have in our bodies to protect us from invaders from outside our body, microbes and such. It crashes that, so it doesn't work anymore. AIDS first spread among homosexuals. Guess, at least by some, is that the disease may have come into the human race by sexual relations between humans and monkeys. After spreading among the homosexual community, it began to spread into the intravenous drug community, and it has now spread into the homosexual and to the heterosexual population. Though initially most of the victims were men, now about 48% of the victims are women. Since the disease was first diagnosed in 1981, more than 25 million people have died from AIDS as of the end of 2006. The situation has become disastrous in Africa below the Sahara, where nearly 25 million people have HIV or AIDS, nearly 6% of the population. It's estimated that about 40 million people have the disease worldwide, and that about 3 million of these died in 2006. Well, AIDS looks like it may be a very serious problem still into the future, that it's not something that we have solved. And just how bad it will get is hard to say. It will certainly depend a good deal on the extent to which humans will exercise proper cautions. Earthquakes. Biblical prediction of the end times mention earthquakes rather prominently. Several Christian writers and speakers have claimed the number of earthquakes has increased recently. However, there is currently no evidence for more earthquakes or larger earthquakes, though we do have to admit that the damage done by earthquakes has increased due to population growth, that areas that were earthquake-prone now have more people living in them than they did before. We discuss that in more detail in another of our PowerPoint talks with the title, let's see if I can remember it, How Near is the End, I believe is the title of that PowerPoint talk. Lastly, we say a few words about pollution and toxins. Both growing technology and increased terrorist activity could produce disaster in the area of pollution and toxins. Some items we should think about, perhaps, a study of lead in human bodies has shown that modern Americans and Britons have 500 to 1,000 times more lead in their bones than American Indians of 1,000 years ago. Obviously, you don't have American Indians around to test, at least we didn't have the tests around 1,000 years ago, but we do have bones from American Indians of 1,000 years ago, and we can test the lead in their bones. Another example would be alcohol use. Long-term heavy alcohol use damages heart muscle in a third of the persons who are engaged in that, and damages their skeletal muscles in almost half the people who engage in it. Dioxins, some of the most powerful cancer-producing chemicals known, have been spread by the paper used in milk cartons and coffee filters. The upshot has been that if you have looked in your grocery store recently, milk cartons are not being used much anymore, switched over to typically plastics of one sort or another. The poison grape scare some years ago was definitely linked to terrorism. The somewhat earlier poison medicine scare was never linked to terrorism, per se, but was surely closely observed by terrorists and produced a very substantial change in how medicines are packaged in the United States, at least, and I suspect in all the Western countries. That is, they have a little seal over the top of the bottle that sometimes even two or three seals that if they are broken, you are not supposed to use that medicine unless you have broken them yourselves and such. So earlier poison medicine scare was surely closely observed by terrorists, and we see some example of remedial action being taken by those. Well, we don't know where something of that sort would go, how difficult it would be for terrorists to try and poison a water supply or something of that sort, and I have not looked into the details of those kind of things. How should we respond to all these sort of things? These disasters do have some real similarity to the disasters pictured in Matthew 24 and in the book of Revelation. Wars, famines, plagues, earthquakes, darkness, sun scorching people. This might be the way God will bring disaster on the earth through ecological disasters of one sort or another, terrorist activity of one sort or another. We don't know. But the Bible pictures even worse disaster ahead for those who continue to live as though God doesn't exist. Consider Jesus' parable of the fruitless fig tree in Luke 13. I give you the text of it here, Luke 13, 6 through 9. Then he, that'd be Jesus, told this parable. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, so he went to look for fruit on it, but did not find any. So he said to the man who took care of the vineyard, "For 3 years now I've been coming to look for fruit on this fig tree and haven't found any. Cut it down. Why should it use up the soil?" "Sir," the man replied, "leave it alone for one more year, and I'll dig around it and fertilize it. If it bears fruit next year, fine. If not, then cut it down." What Jesus is doing here in this parable is he is giving us an analogy between the way a farmer would look at a tree in his farm that had been planted to have figs on it and wasn't having any and was using up the fertility of the soil in his vineyard. Namely, he's concerned to cut it down. It's wasting space. Think about that analogy as an analogy of God as the farmer and us individually and collectively as the fig tree. What did God make us to be? And are we being that? Answer, no. He made us to love the Lord himself with all our heart and mind and soul. He made us to love our neighbors ourselves. We're not doing it. Why shouldn't we be cut down? Why shouldn't these disasters or other sorts happen to us? And this parable gives an answer. If you haven't been cut down yet, that's because you're like this tree that's being given one more chance. Leave it alone for one more year, the worker in the garden replies to the owner. I'll dig around it and fertilize it. If it bears fruit next year, fine. If not, then cut it down. That's the lesson we should be learning from disasters around us. If we survive the disaster, we're given an opportunity to repent, to turn back to God, to seek him, and try to be, or ask him to help us to be, what we ought to be. And that, I think, is the lesson we can get from ecological and other kinds of disasters as well. May the Lord help us to respond properly to these dangers and not wait until they happen to us. Well, ecological disaster, a warning, I suggest, of the wrath to come.